Tell me how you found Hadley.
I found Hadley in A Movable Feast, which had me just riveted, you know? Part of it is this great, to learn about Hemingway before he's Hemingway, you know, in these Parisian cafes, and he's inventing himself, and he's, as an older, sadder, much sadder man, you know, and he's writing this at the end of his life in the late 50s and 1960, he's reaching back through time and space to kind of cherish that earlier version of himself, you know, that has become quite different from his current self. The later Hemingway, I think, stands in sharp opposition to the early Hemingway, and I believe that he thought that about himself as well, you know. He was an incredible purist as a young writer. He believed that the writer had to be up alone, like sweating it out one sentence at a time in his garret, you know, not talking rot in the cafes, not being on display somewhere, and not listening to the voices of others, you know, to approve or disapprove what he was up to. And very late in his life, he became very susceptible to the voices of others. And if you read A Movable Feast, he talks about the rich, you know, and he doesn't quite forgive himself for catering to their whims and for wanting to be famous. I mean, the fact that his ambition kind of gets the better of him.
I don't want to call Hadley his long-suffering wife, but there are moments when I...
Oh, she only suffered for 6 years.
and she was one of four.
And she didn't just suffer. I mean, she didn't just suffer. I believe that she was happy, that they were very happy together, particularly early on, or else there's no story there, you know? This is the story of a rise and fall of a marriage, and a great love story, I think.
Very passionate, you know? To start.
Yes.
And she's like a virgin from the
middle
of nowhere.
St. Louis, the middle of nowhere. And she's lived, I like Hadley's trajectory, you know, she has this great arc, you know, she's from this Midwestern family, she's quiet and reserved and sheltered and protected. Her father commits suicide when she's 13 years old, so sort of she has that against her. And also when she's 6 years old, she falls out of the window of her second story nursery and injures her back to the degree that her family wonders if she'll ever walk again. And even when she does make a full recovery, they think that she's fragile, that she shouldn't attempt too much. You know, she doesn't run and jump and play. She doesn't get to have a real life. And who does she meet but Ernest Hemingway, who has a profound zest for life and opens the world, you know, to her. And together they go off and travel in these marvelous places. And she learns, too, that she has tremendous physical resources, that she has the legs to go alpine skiing, you know.
In days when you didn't just take the gondola up, darling, to the top of the mountain.
You had to hike to the top of this glacier so that you could fly back down again. I mean, you know, the fact that she goes to the bullfights and feather stitches baby clothes at ringside. I mean, she gets to have a bigger life because of him. And regardless of what they lose when they lose each other, you know that at the end of her life and at the end of his life, they both reached back to that time with tremendous affection.
I didn't feel sorry for Pauline at all. I did not like her.
Yeah. She gets a bad rap in my book, but mostly, I think, because it's very hard for me to understand. I think there are these lines you don't cross, and one of those lines is, sleeping with your best friend's husband. Like, that's just not, it's just not okay. But also because I've read her letters from that time and her cables to Ernest and her cables to Hadley, and this very interesting thing was happening. She never gave up the pretense that Hadley was her best friend. So she's writing, she's seducing Ernest, and she's also writing to Hadley at the same time saying, oh, I just miss you tons, and you know, can't we go off and do X together? And even when Hadley knows about Pauline and Pauline knows Hadley knows, her letters are so odd. It's as if she wants Hadley's approval. She wants Hadley to still love and accept her when she's sleeping with her husband. in the revised or restored edition of A Movable Feast that was published just a year or two ago, there's a phrase that's not in the 1964 edition where he calls Pauline the most relentless one, you know? And of course it's not really fair of him because he was making tremendous mistakes and he was betraying Hadley as Pauline was, you know? It's only Hadley who has done nothing wrong, you know? She's just trying to make her marriage work.
To be fair to her, she doesn't know she's marrying Ernest Hemingway. I mean, we have this value, mm-hmm. insight going, oh, come on, you're marrying Hemingway. But he wasn't.
He wasn't himself.
No, he was just this.
He was no one. He was writing ad copy for Firestone Tires. And in fact, she didn't even know that he was. He wasn't a sure thing. You know, later, it would never happen again that it could be that pure. Pauline, he had already written The Sun Also Rises. Everybody knew that his ascendancy was already on the move. I mean, he was going to be the writer of his generation, the voice of his generation, right? That's who Pauline married. Hadley married nobody, a whippersnapper, yeah, who had these crazy ambitions. But when she read his work, she quite candidly said, you know, I don't know what it is that you're doing here, but you have something, and I know that you believe that you'll do it, and I believe you. I trust your sense of your own worth.
The book is The Paris Wife. It's a novel. I've been speaking with the author, Paula MacLean, and The Paris Wife, published by Bond Street Books, distributed by Doubleday Canada.